Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Nobody ever messed with the sheriff.
The November election is still 3 months away, but a new Douglas County sheriff has likely been decided.
I picked up my work ethic working at Bear Shoe Works. The success of small businesses like that and learning how to manage those businesses carries over into how I plan to operate the sheriff's department.
Matt Izzard prepares to take office. Plus,
my sweetheart left before the guitar man, but
he's a country singer-songwriter from the Driftless area who can't get enough of the Twin Ports.
It's a beautiful place. That area.
We'll catch up with Greg Hall. Those stories in a regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Nobody ever messed.
The November election is still 3 months away, but a new Douglas County sheriff has likely been decided.
I picked up my work ethic working at Bear Shoe Works. The success of small businesses like that and learning how to manage those businesses carries over into how I plan to operate the sheriff's department.
Matt Izzard prepares to take office. Plus,
my sweetheart left before the guitar man, but
he's a country singer-songwriter from the Driftless area who can't get enough of the Twin Ports.
It's a beautiful place, superior that area.
We'll catch up with Greg Hall.
I'm still standing low now. I'm still standing tall.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Earlier this month, the city of Minneapolis named national policing expert Cedric Alexander as its new community safety commissioner, a newly created position in which he'll oversee the city's police, fire, emergency response, and violence prevention efforts. Regular listeners to our show should find his name familiar. He's been a regular guest talking about policing and most recently about the office of sheriff, with the retirements of three longtime sheriffs in our listening area. The successor to one of those in Douglas County was likely decided in a primary election last week, and we'll hear more about his new sheriff in a minute. But first, here's an excerpt from our conversation with Cedric Alexander in March about what exactly a sheriff is and what makes a good one.
The sheriff position is an elected position. Historically, that's been the case. It is that number one constitutional officer that has a great deal of authority as it relates to county government.
And what's the difference between a sheriff and a chief of police?
Well, primarily, a sheriff is an elected official. That's it. And city police are usually appointed by the elected or appointed officials. To the general public, a lot of people don't really particularly know the difference between sheriff and a police officer. They just know that they're supposed to enforce the law. They know that one side of the street could be in the city limits, the other side of the street could be in the county. But regardless of where they all operate under the same state laws.
So what should we be looking for in a sheriff?
What is your philosophy around public safety? How do you view public safety in the 21st century? What are your thoughts about advancing technology into community policing? And what is community policing to you? And you adopt that philosophy. Is it meaningful to you? Or is it just a term that gets thrown around?
That was an excerpt from our conversation in March about the position of sheriff with national policing expert Cedric Alexander. 2 weeks ago, Alexander was named to the new position of community safety commissioner for the city of Minneapolis. And with that, let's head back to Douglas County, where a new sheriff was likely decided in last week's Democratic primary. Matthew Izzard, currently a detective in the sheriff's department, garnered 62% of the vote in a three-way race against Sheriff's Deputy Brian Witt, who got 18%, and Douglas County Board Chairman Mark Liebert, who received 19%. With no Republican opponent in November, Izzard will likely take office in January. Izzard is a lifelong resident of Billings Park in Superior. Married and the father of three girls, he's a graduate of Superior High, which he attended with a part-time job sweeping floors and shining shoes. He went on to Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, now Northwoods Tech, and worked at Grizzly's Restaurant in Superior before starting with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office in 2003. We'll let him tell us the rest of his story and, more importantly, his plans as sheriff. Welcome to Simply Superior, Matt Izzard.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate you having me on today.
So first, tell us something about the job. We had a conversation recently with Cedric Alexander. He told us the differences between a sheriff and a chief of police. How do you view the job?
The difference to me is the sheriff answers directly to the public, where a police chief answers to the city council and the mayor, and sometimes, unfortunately, special interest groups, where the sheriff makes the decisions on what's best for the department and what's best for the citizens. And if the citizens disagree, they have the opportunity to vote out the sheriff in 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Cedric Alexander said pretty much the same thing. He pointed out that because sheriffs are political officials, and in fact, they win a popularity contest to get the job, that they don't have to have any specific training. You've been with the department a long time. What qualifies you for the job?
Well, like you said, I began my career at Grizzly's, which was a management position. I managed a couple local small businesses before getting into the sheriff's department. When I began the sheriff's department in the jail, I actually became a trainer. So I trained new hires how to do the job. And then I specialized in several different topics of training, which led me to teaching at WITC, now Northwood Technical College, which has really kept me at the forefront of how law enforcement should operate, according to the Department of Justice in Wisconsin. One of the other candidates didn't have that experience and still did fairly well in the election because he's been in politics for 20 years.
Actually, I thought you were going to take us back to shining shoes and sweeping floors. Does any of that enter into it? They are life experiences.
They are. Part of that is being local, too. I've spent my entire life in Douglas County. I picked up my work ethic working at Bear Shoe Works for a gentleman named Harry Bear at a business that's been in Superior for over 100 years. And I think the success of small businesses like that and learning how to manage those businesses carries over into how I plan to operate the sheriff's department.
What are the challenges for Douglas County? It includes Superior and more rural areas outside of the city. Superior isn't exactly a big city, but it is indelibly linked to Duluth and has much more urban concerns than, again, the outlying areas.
Some of the challenges particular to Douglas County is just the geographical nature of Douglas County. We have, Superior as a larger city. We have smaller communities that are not as densely populated. But also the recreational aspect of it. A lot of people don't realize that we do patrol the water, the trails, the woods, things like that.
And what parts don't you do? The Superior Police Department, of course, is there, and some of the small towns have departments too.
That's correct. There are a couple of the small towns that do have constables, but we still have jurisdiction throughout the whole county, whether that's Superior or Lake Nebagman or Gordon. We do have jurisdiction, and we do work hand-in-hand with those other agencies as well.
Mm-hmm. What would you say the Sheriff Department does well, and what are other areas that may be in need of improvement?
I think what our department does well is community policing. Our deputies, for the most part, live in the community or communities that they serve. They're literally policing their neighbors. That leads to a better relationship, in my opinion. If we see somebody out walking their dog, we stop and have a conversation with them. We listen to their concerns and the information that they might be able to pass along with them. And it's not uncommon for people to approach us with information or concerns. So I think we really do community policing well in the county.
And areas of improvement?
Throughout the department?
Yeah.
There are some things I'm looking at right now. I think one of the first things I'd like to do is sit down with the county board and establish a good working relationship with them. Over the last few months, the topic of body cameras have come up. I've already reached out to some distributors and trying to put together some numbers and a general plan or get some ideas how to move forward with that. At this time, we don't have body cameras or squad cameras.
That's something that people are kind of confused about. A lot of people think they're everywhere because you see them on TV or whatnot, but it's not a national mandate.
It's not at this point. My opinion is that they will be eventually. The biggest hurdle right now is cost. Not only the upfront purchasing cost of body cameras, but the long-term data storage and data management. My opponent, the county board chairman, Mark Liebert, he was confident that day one that we would have body cameras. And I'd like to sit down with him and figure out how we can make that happen.
About buy-in from the deputies, that was an impediment, I believe, to the deployment of body cameras in the beginning in some departments with resistance from rank-and-file officers.
Getting the deputies to buy into it?
Yes.
I think as long as the department trusts that the administration isn't using them as a tool to be Big Brother, and it is an evidentiary tool, it is a tool for transparency, and a little bit to cover us, the liability of false allegations of wrongdoing. A lot of times when we deal with people on the side of the road in rural areas, it is just a one-on-one interaction, and it's our word against theirs. So I feel that there are many positives to having body cameras. I'd also like to look at getting body cameras for the jailers. A lot of people forget that the jail falls under the umbrella of the sheriff. And I've spoken to people from other counties throughout Wisconsin whose jails have body cameras. And they said that there is a drastic improvement in inmate behavior when they know they're being recorded.
We are speaking with Matt Izzard. He's currently a detective in the Douglas County Sheriff's Department, who garnered 62% of the vote in a three-way race in the Democratic primary on August 9th and will be taking office in January. I'm correct in that, right? Normally, you'd be on the general election ballot in November, but there's not a Republican candidate, so you're the likely winner of the final.
Correct. I'll be running unopposed, as far as I know, in the general election in November. There still is a possibility of a write-in candidate, but I think the likelihood is low based on conversations I've had with the other candidates.
One of the things Cedric Alexander mentioned in our conversation is longevity in office, and he pointed out that sheriffs tend to stay in office a long time. Tom Dalbeck, the incumbent who's stepping down, has been in office 20 years. What about you? It's kind of like a job interview question. Where do you see yourself in 20 years? Will you still be sheriff?
Well, I've been very cautious not to make any promises throughout this campaign. But my plan is two terms. That would put me at about 54 years old, in which I would be eligible to retire. But it's hard to predict what the future holds.
The other thing unique about the sheriff positions in our area, not just Douglas County, but neighboring St. Louis County in Minnesota and Bayfield County, is that they too will be getting new sheriffs after longtime office holders announce they are stepping down. You'll have two new colleagues. How do you begin working with them?
Well, that's a good question.
And you don't know who they are yet because they didn't have to worry about just one primary and they'll still have to be chosen in the November election.
That's correct. I feel confident that we'd be able to work with whoever wins in St. Louis County. And I'm not sure. I haven't followed up on Bayfield so much. I think regardless of who wins or who loses, historically, all the surrounding agencies have had a good working relationship, and I look to continue that. I've had experience working in most of the northern Wisconsin counties as a trainer or a guest trainer from Polk County, Sawyer County. I've taught in Ashland, New Richmond, Barron County. So, and through my deputization as a U.S. Marshal, I've actually worked in the UP of Michigan and in St. Louis County. So I think we can carry that forward as we move ahead.
One of the biggest issues in policing, both nationally and in most local jurisdictions, including our own, is racial profiling and racial disparities or racial equity. And of course, we're not far from Minneapolis, where really that became ground zero with the killing of George Floyd. How well do you think the department has performed in that regard, and what are your plans for any improvement?
What I did, I'll go back to pre-COVID. During COVID, it wasn't as available. But pre-COVID, I spoke to my administration and actually got them to approve and pay for some of our deputies to go to the UMD Summit for equity, inclusion, and diversity, I believe is what it was called. So I attended that back in 2017 or 18 with some of the deputies here. And like I said, during COVID, that wasn't as available to us. We were a little bit limited on what we could do. But even before all this started, I was encouraging education in areas like that. And I see that happening in the future as well. There's a lot of opportunities now. And I think the more you know and the more you understand, even about different cultures or you know, different topics in law enforcement, I think it makes you a better deputy. So I've encouraged it for years, and I will continue to do that.
Well, you mentioned community policing, and that's one interpretation of what that means, where you know the neighborhood and you know the people there, and you're not showing up as someone who's viewed as a member of an invading force.
Yes. And we have some people in the county that suffer from mental health issues. And when we learn things like that, we actually talk amongst ourselves about, you know, how things went right on our calls, how things may have gone wrong, how we can improve for the next time. We debrief calls like that and put information in to help better the relationship if there are calls in the future. As big as Douglas County is, it's still a small community. So it's not hard to learn where we can improve.
Any other plans that you have you'd like to share?
Well, one of the topics I did want to talk about is the jail turnover. The jail, since about 2015, has had over 200% staffing turnover. That led to almost $500,000 in overtime in 2021. And in my opinion, it began as a marked point in time when the county took away collective bargaining and the protective service retirement from the jailers. That was as a result of Governor Walker's Act 10. And I've been doing a little bit of research on how to remedy that situation. And I've actually come across some statistics across Wisconsin where 14 counties have protected service retirement reinstated, along with the Wisconsin Department of Corrections prison system. So I think reinstating protective service for the jail is one more benefit to help the longevity of the jailers' careers. I think it would cost way less than $500,000 to implement. And once we look at the numbers together and what other counties have done, I think the choices can be pretty obvious to the county board that this is something that the jail needs. Right now, the overtime that the jailers are working, the end of last year, 2021, there was weeks, months, I should say, that jailers were mandated over 90 hours in a work week. And people working that many hours, being tired, unfortunately, could become complacent, which puts the safety of our inmates in jeopardy. And that's our number one goal, is the safety and security of the people we house in the jail.
Well, we've been speaking with Matt Izzard. He is, shall we say, the heir apparent as Douglas County Sheriff, most likely taking office in January 2023 after having won a three-way Democratic primary on August 9th and not facing a Republican challenger in November. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate you having me today.
Coming up, a country singer draws on his old farmstead roots.
Here for a minute, then gone too soon. Like Wisconsin winter afternoon.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Greg Hall hails from Wisconsin, a little south of our region in the township of Madarie, right outside of La Crosse. His roots go back in the area to 1868, and his parents still live on the original farmland. That's part of the Driftless area, which he calls the most magnetic place on Earth, even though he's played all over the nation. I'm going to guess our area is his second favorite since he plays here as often as he can, and he's flattered us by saying how much he wanted to join us on the show, and I'm not going to disabuse him of that desire. With that, welcome to Simply Superior, Greg Hall.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good to be here.
So right off the bat, I'm going to call your music country, and you certainly can't accept or correct that, but I have to ask, is that the indigenous sound of Madarie Township? It's in the country, but it isn't quite Nashville.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's kind of how I grew up, you know. I mean, country rock, I guess you can call it, whatever. You know, my parents and my ancestors from that valley, they're all farmers. My dad's still an organic farmer. So, you know, just growing up on country music, my first concert ever was Johnny Cash and the Carter Family. It's always been, my roots have always been country. You know, I've been swayed by, you know, the jam band scenes and the Grateful Dead and the Zeppelins. You know, I have a great appreciation for all music, but I also play in a band called the White Iron Band, which is a big Minnesota outlaw renegade country band as well. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my bread and butter.
Where was that Johnny Cash, June Carter concert?
It was in La Crosse at the La Crosse Center in probably 89.
Wasn't at a prison.
No. I think Marty Stewart opened the show.
All right.
An insanely good night of music for actually, I still have a picture that I took of Johnny Cash framed on my wall from that night.
And so what was your musical training? And how much of it do you attribute to your stomping grounds?
Well, I took a lot of guitar lessons as a kid. I've been performing since I was about 9 years old at like the talent shows, and my mom is a piano player, and my dad's family is real musical. I come from a long family of theater actors, artists, singers. I'm the one that kind of took it more on the, you know, the band direction. My brother is like a crooner, a Frank Sinatra type singer, but mostly my family is more into the theater and arts. But I think I'm the only one making a living at it.
Well, congratulations for that. Although you got me intrigued with your brother. You ever do duets?
We have in the past. He's a tree trimmer, so he's busy all the time. So we've tried to work stuff out in the future. He always gets up, and we got a couple songs that we do together, you know. But
so what are they? Country or Sinatra?
Country. We do a couple of those old Travis Tritt, Marty Stewart duets.
All right.
You know.
So he makes the compromise, not you.
Yeah.
Well, we are speaking with Greg Hall. He hails from Madarie Township in the Driftless region of Wisconsin. And you're now in the...
I am actually still in La Crosse.
Oh,
but
okay.
I play a lot in Minneapolis. Probably for the last 10 or 12 years, I've been in the White Iron Band pretty much full time. And they hail from the Twin Cities area. Mm-hmm. And so I've been establishing and networking with those guys through the years, and now I'm trying to kind of more do my own thing and then capitalize on those contacts that I've made that I would not have probably made had I not been in the White Iron Band. So I'm very grateful for those guys. But now I'm just trying to, at 41, really trying to maybe take just more my own direction and, you know, concentrating on my own music and my own band. But I have a lot of musicians from Minneapolis that I play with: Chris Castino of the Big Woo, Eddie Juneman from White Iron Band, Dimitri Rallis from Frog Leg has been sitting in, and you know, then I do a lot of Mike Cini, our drummer. He is from the Twin Cities area too. He's in a band called Down Low, and Mark Grundhofer, a good friend of mine from the Big Woo and MJG Productions. Like I've got my Minnesota family is helped me out majorly, and I couldn't be more thankful for the opportunities Minnesota and the musicians have given me over the years.
Well, you know what? You just set up one of your songs called My Friends, so I'm assuming those people you mentioned are not just bandmates, but your friends, right?
Yeah. And that song, you know, this song is kind of about some of my friends that have passed, and I feel like it's really relatable because for everybody right now because, you know, the whole COVID era, and we've all lost significant others and family members, and it's just been a real, you know, whirlwind. It's probably one of the sadder songs I've written, but I feel it's real relatable to all of us right now, especially.
All right. Well, let's take a listen to it. Here is My Friends by Greg Hall and his friends.
Here for a minute, then gone too soon. Like Wisconsin winter afternoon. Things you thought that were forever didn't last that long. Here today, tomorrow they're gone. Long gone. Sometimes I wish I never would have bought that bar. Went down the wrong path just a little too far. And I was always there right by your side. Just a dumb kid along for the high. I can't change those days, I can only change my way. Party everywhere she goes. What makes her tick, only heaven knows. She never was the same after Danny died. She needed him around to survive. I miss my friends, the roads don't go forever, and parties end.
My Friends by our guest Greg Hall. He is speaking with us from his stomping ground near La Crosse, although he plays with band members from Minnesota and throughout the region. You've got a song, Ramblin' Man. So I'm wondering, I'm stretching here, I suppose, but you talked about the roots, but you know, everybody's got to get away from home to grow a bit, right? So, you know, tell me about your travels. And I know you played across the country too, but.
Yeah, you know, my roots are in the Midwest area, but I got to tour around. My friend Nicholas David ended up being a top three contestant on The Voice a couple years after he asked me to join his band. And we got to travel all over the U.S. I mean, all these places that I'd never been to. It was just really fun for me obviously to be on the road with my friends, but just to play with that caliber of musician was super fun.
How did it influence you? You had told me one of the places you played was New Orleans. I can't imagine going to New Orleans without coming back with some influence. I don't know if you do a funeral band or not, but it's got to rub off. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great because it was, you know, off that big time, off the country beaten path. So it was good for me. It really helped me grow as a musician to be a more of a, to adapt to more of a rhythm and blues type band, other than strictly country and country rock and blues, mm-hmm. you know, and just to get out and see the country, you know. I'm a father of two wonderful sons, so right now I'm just trying to stick close to home, just because you know, I want to be here for these years with my boys when they're young. You know, they grow up fast, mm-hmm. but when they were little, I got to go on the road and actually have those experiences. But now I'm really trying to just focus more on the Midwest, just so I can stay more close to home.
All right. Well, for the touring you did do and the touring to come, let's hear Ramblin' Man. Unless that's not what it's about. You want to set it up for us?
No, it's definitely about that. You know, just being a traveling musician and being on the road and, you know, life on the run ain't for everyone.
All right. Well, here's Ramblin' Man by Greg Hall.
I'm a ramblin' man in a traveling band. Love my life out on the road. I've been a lot of places, seen a million pretty faces. Lord knows I love them all. Sometimes I find one, so I decide to stick around some. I don't play till Houston Friday night. A couple days of whiskey, feeling footloose and frisky. But I hear the road and it's calling me back home. Soon you'll be seeing that I'm leaving. Packing my bags, I gotta get back home.
Greg Hall. He joins us from his long time family roots and everything in the La Crosse area. Tell us more about where we can find your music.
It's on all the internet platforms like Spotify and all that stuff. I bet you there's at least 60 different songs on there from the previous albums and whatnot. And my website, greghallmusic.com, you can purchase the vinyl,
And Greg is G-R-E-G-G.
Greg Hall, G-R-E-G-G-H-A-L-L, music.com.
All right. And what's so special about our area? Again, you have been flattering us with the praise for joining us on the show. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
And you say how much you just love performing here. And by the way, we know it's wonderful, but we want to hear you tell us.
I love it up there. It's a beautiful place. I've spent a lot of time in the North Superior, that area up. I have a huge family near Hayward and Spooner area. My uncle is actually the chief of police of Hayward, Wisconsin, for years.
I'm going to remember that. What's his name?
Yeah.
Is that a get out of jail free card?
Good guy. And I've just spent a lot of time up there, and it's beautiful up there, and the lakes, and yeah, we had a really good gig at Earth Rider this last June with White Iron Band, and my band opened up for them. And you know, there's actually a White Iron Band song about Duluth, so I mean, there's a lot of good memories up there. And my old band called the Smoking Bandits, we played a lot at Fitger's Tap Room a bunch of times, and yeah, nothing but great memories from up there. Just a beautiful place to travel, and yeah, I enjoy Duluth and Superior. Both those areas are just, you know, going over that bridge, it's just magnificent. We got to do a festival there a few years back, and we all took a dip in the water, and yeah, it was
a balmy 40 cold. Degrees usually, right?
Yeah, it was cold.
In August.
Yeah, it was. It was in August, too, honestly.
All right. Well, you know what? That might lead us to Still Standing is your last song, or Love.
No, Still Standing. That's great.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us about that to take us out.
Well, the song that I co-wrote with Sammy Wyant of the White Iron Band, it's kind of about just going through the 2020 and making it out, you know, just appreciate what you got, because you just never know when it's going to be gone, you know, and making sure you tell your loved ones that you love them, and just staying strong during these uncertain times, you know. We're still standing, so let's do the best with what we got, you know, and spread the love, man.
All right, can't ask for more than that. We've been speaking with Greg Hall. He's a longtime ancestry in the Driftless region, a little south of here in Wisconsin, and soon to make an appearance in our area. And we really appreciate you joining us. Thank you for joining us, Greg Hall.
Well, I appreciate you as well, man. For sure. Thank you very much.
They keep dropping like flies around me, but I'm still standing. I might lose my mind and go crazy, but I'm still standing. I've been here before. On my knees, crabby flop on the floor. I think I'll head downtown for another round. But I'm still standing. I go to work today. A state trooper passed me up on the way. He tried to turn around, drove in the lane. Sweetheart, let my phone.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, Wisconsin Point is the site of Ojibwe burial grounds dating back to before the time of contact. Those grounds are now being repatriated to the Fond du Lac Band.
That's right. Thursday, the Fond du Lac tribe celebrated, along with dignitaries from both Wisconsin and Minnesota, over the return of those burial grounds on Wisconsin Point. The land transfer was made official by the city of Superior, and the remote strip of land offshore from Lake Superior marks the ancestral home of the tribe that settled there as early as 400 years ago. But in 1918, nearly 200 Ojibwe graves were removed from the burial grounds of Wisconsin Point. The site represents the endpoint of the Ojibwe's migration story for the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and at least seven generations were laid to rest at the cemetery there, including the community's leader, Chief Joseph Osagie. And not only were the remains removed from Wisconsin Point, living tribal members at the time were also uprooted, including Colleen Aird's parents. And Aird, who turned 100 years old this week, says the return of the burial grounds is another reason to celebrate, and she's a direct descendant of Osagie. And many people spoke at the two-hour ceremony at the Black Bear Casino. That included Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, as well as Wisconsin's U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. And Superior City Councilor Jenny Van Sickle was recognized for her role in facilitating the transfer, along with Superior City officials. And when I caught up with Fond du Lac Tribal Chair Kevin Dupe after the event, he said he felt like he should be at Wisconsin Point. And he said that through the actions taken today, that he felt that their ancestors would finally be able to rest.
Well, in related matters, four northern Wisconsin tribes are appealing a case on taxation on tribal lands.
That's right. A federal appeals court ruled on Monday that the state can't impose property taxes on tribal lands that have changed hands without congressional approval. That decision was made by a three-judge panel from the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and it's part of a lawsuit that four northern Wisconsin tribes filed back in 2018 fighting taxation of their tribal lands. The Lacouturay, the Lac des Flambeaux, the Red Cliff, and the Bad River tribes sued after the state imposed property taxes on land within their reservations, and that land is immune from state property taxes under an 1854 treaty with the federal government. But the state argued that some of that land had actually been sold to non-American Indians before the land was sold back to tribal members. And so because it fell out of tribal ownership, they're saying that it can be taxed. The three-judge panel disagreed with that. They said the land isn't taxable without congressional approval. And they said that only Congress can diminish tribal sovereignty and the treaty. I caught up with Governor Tony Evers at the event for the Fond du Lac land transfer, and he said during his speech that the state of Wisconsin is committed to honoring treaty rights. However, afterward, he said that they had not yet made a final decision on whether they would pursue steps to consider more legal action following the appeals court ruling. So a decision has not yet been made, and we'll see what happens in the future of whether this would go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, heading all the way out on the water, or where the water meets the shore, the port of Duluth Superior may be getting a boost, particularly on the Superior side.
That's right. If you remember, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act was passed last year, and that included nearly $17 billion for waterway and coastal infrastructure. And Superior is benefiting from that because they won a roughly $8 million grant to fund repairs of a facility that's no longer being used in the port of Duluth Superior on the Superior side. And that money will go to fund construction of a new sheet pile retaining wall and also improvements to rail and roads and stormwater. The whole purpose behind that is they're looking at increasing their capacity for imports and exports. And the docks that are currently available on the Superior side are in disrepair. So that limits the number of ships that they can bring in for freight. And by expanding the capacity of the Superior port, they think that they can address some supply chain issues that would make things easier and possibly bring in more ships from coastal ports, which, as you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic have been pretty clogged up and there have been a lot of delays. And so hopefully this is a way to provide an economic benefit for the region.
All right. Rick, on the Minnesota side, nurses in Duluth and the Twin Cities have authorized a strike, though that doesn't mean they're headed to the picket line just yet.
Yes, nurses in the Minnesota Nurses Association have voted to authorize a strike. The MNA announced late Monday night. The 15,000 MNA members in the Twin Ports and Twin Cities voted overwhelmingly in favor of the strike, according to a news release from MNA. The vote was taken among nurses at 15 hospitals under 7 hospital systems. Nurse negotiation leaders are now authorized to call a strike following a 10-day notice to hospital employers. Chris Rubesch, who's the first vice president of MNA and a registered nurse at Essentia Health, said he couldn't release specific vote tallies, but said it was very clear that nurses were in favor of the strike. Any strike would be the first time Twin Cities and Twin Ports nurses take such an action together in contract negotiations. Rubesch said that 15 hospitals involved in the vote are in discussions for when a strike could happen and what the strike would entail. He said if notice for a strike is given, all participating MNA bodies would strike at the same time. Hospitals affected by the strike would be announced at the time the 10-day notice is given. In separate statements, Essentia Health and St. Luke's said that they are creating contingency plans in anticipation of MNA member nurses going on strike and to ensure that there will still be patient care available. Nurses have been in contract negotiations across the entire state since March and have been working without contracts since July 1. In a recent statement, St. Luke's says it has offered a 10.25% raise for nurses over 3 years. At a news conference Tuesday morning, Rubis said that staffing is the main issue statewide that has led nurses to take action. And he said St. Luke's is deflecting from that issue by talking only about wages.
All right. Well, going back into the archives, and a reminder that there's no statute of limitations on murder, a cold case from 1986 in Hibbing has been resolved.
Yes, it has. 36 years in the making. It took a jury 9 hours across 2 days to reach a verdict in the murder trial of Hibbing's Michael Allen Carbo Jr. The 12-member jury found Carbo, 54 years old, guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder while committing or attempting criminal sexual conduct on Nancy Doherty in her 1986 death. Carbo will receive automatic life sentence without possibility of parole when he appears for sentencing September 30. Carbo was just 18 at the time of Doherty's death. The 38-year-old mother of two was found dead in her bed on July 16, 1986, having been sexually assaulted and strangled. Carbo, who lived within a mile of the victim, did not have any known relationship with Doherty, and he was never a suspect until Chisholm Police contracted with a genetic genealogist to compare crime scene DNA samples against those in privately maintained databases and then developed a profile of the suspected killer. DNA from several sources at the crime scene was conclusively shown to be a match with Carbo. Now, Carbo's attorney did not dispute the DNA evidence, saying that his client engaged in consensual sex with Doherty before she was killed by another person. But St. Louis County Prosecutor John Hollitz told jurors that Doherty's rape and murder were intertwined and no other credible physical evidence at the scene could point to a different killer.
So all the evidence was preserved all this time?
Well, they had preserved it at the time of the crime. I believe it was in storage. And then once technology caught up with it, you know, then they contracted with this genetic genealogist and formed a database on the suspected killer and eventually matched that with DNA from Carbo Jr.
Well, also on the range, Minnesota said goodbye to a respected longtime legislator.
Yes, longtime Iron Range lawmaker David Tomasoni died at the age of 69 after a battle with ALS. The Minnesota Senate announced Friday morning, August 12. Tomasoni, an independent lawmaker from Chisholm, was first elected to the Minnesota House of Representatives in 1992. He was elected to the Senate in 2000, where he served the rest of his time in his legislature. Thomas Thorne received his diagnosis with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, in 2021 and continued to serve as senator. In his last session at the Capitol, he sponsored a bill to provide $20 million in grants for ALS research and $5 million to caregiving for people suffering from the disease. The bill passed overwhelmingly in the House and Senate and was signed into law by Governor Tim Walz this spring. Prior to launching his nearly 30-year career in the Minnesota legislature, Thomas Thorne played hockey. He was a standout defenseman at Chisholm High School. He was a four-year letter winner at the University of Denver from 1971 to 75 and skated in the NCAA Frozen Four twice. He also played briefly for the New York Rangers minor league system, but then played professional hockey in Italy, his family's ancestral home, for 16 years. He won his first campaign in 1992 and served in the House of Representatives for 8 years before then beginning to serve in the Senate. Thomas Thorne represented the Democratic Farmer Labor Party until 2020, when he left the party to form an independent caucus. He was elected president pro tem for the Minnesota Senate for the 2021 session.
And he will be missed. Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Greg Hall. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.